This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. Scott Simon is away. I'm Susan Stamberg.
So you are reiterating that every Iraqi should respect the Iraqi law. So the law instituted before represents the will of the people, right? So you should not work under the jurisdiction of the coalition forces.
Through a translator, former Iraqi leader Saddam Hussein speaking to an unidentified judge in a Baghdad courtroom on Thursday. NPR senior news analyst Daniel Shore joins us. Hi, Dan.
Good morning, Susan. It's been a long time.
Long time, and it's good to talk to you. It's been a momentous week in Iraq, hasn't it? Jump-started exits, all kinds of dramatic entrances. Let's start with the exits. Monday, a small virtually private ceremony. The coalition provisional government hands over power to Iraq's interim government. It happened 2 days earlier than the deadline, which had been set at June 30th. How come?
Well, at least partly for security reasons, I imagine, in order to catch the terrorists napping in case they were planning some big terrorist event for June 30th, the scheduled handover date. Everything about the handover suggested that security was a primary concern. Schedule was left open until the last minute. President Bush was in Istanbul and was advised at the NATO summit that it had happened. It would have been a disaster if the interim government had been, so to speak, strangled in its cradle. Mm-hmm. And here was Administrator Paul Bremer, who was practically snuck out of town just to call no attention.
Yeah. Well, one of the last things that the former administrator, Mr. Bremer, reportedly said to the deputy prime minister of Iraq was, "It's up to you now." That sounds almost like chilling words. What will Bremer's legacy be, do you think?
You know, it reminds me of Benjamin Franklin saying, "You have a republic if you can keep it."
Yeah.
A little bit like that. The legacy of Paul Bremer, well, he made a couple of big mistakes, like disbanding the army. That army has to be now rather painfully replaced. But in general, you can say he did give Iraqis a sense of civil order, a sense that they can create some kind of government. He did not give them, wasn't able to give them, a sense of security, which remains the greatest challenge to Iraq today. The insurgency clearly goes on.
Mm. Well, but what's happened really is the U.S. has handed over political power to the Iraqis, but still, this country controls nearly 140,000 U.S. troops, 25,000 foreign troops in Iraq. So how's the military and that interim government going to coexist? What will their relationship be like?
It'll be very tricky.
Yeah.
When an occupying force becomes a protective force, there has to be some kind of making weight in order to do that. The Prime Minister Alawi will have to work out a way to be able to consult with the U.S. Army that leaves Alawi with some respect and at the same time doesn't allow the army to take over. The question of who calls the shots, who calls the shots literally, I guess, that can develop a smooth relationship or it can lead to a disastrous relationship, and that is now the big test.
Yeah, really tricky. So this early handover did seem to catch the insurgents off guard, but not for long. There's still violence in Iraq, rockets wrecking parts of two hotels in Baghdad yesterday, two Marines killed in separate incidents. Today another Marine has died. So is there any confidence that there will be any less violence now that the Iraqis are running their own government?
Well, it is not very optimistic that Muqtada Sadr, the Shiite militant, says that the occupation hasn't ended, and he calls on his followers to continue resisting the presence of foreign troops. You know, this may all be only part of a shakedown cruise for the new government, or it could spell further trouble, and I'd be the last to predict.
Sure. Well, let's turn now to Saddam Hussein and his return to public view this week. He certainly looked better than he did when the Marines dug him out of that spider hole in Tikrit last December, huh?
He looked a lot better than that. He looked a lot better than a lot of his countrymen have looked when they were in the hands of the American army.
Yes.
At Abu Ghraib and so on. But I'm just joking there.
Hmm.
Well, you know, remember that Saddam Hussein's 30-year rule was built partly on theater. And this man hasn't lost a sense of theater. Mm. And so he was able to sit up there and say, you can't do anything to me because I am still the president, I don't recognize you, and all the rest of it. He's playing a role. Now the role is victim, defiant.
Yeah, certainly defiant. And in court, he calls President Bush a criminal. He pointed his finger at the presiding judge. So what do you think the impression was that he made around the world? And also, what about on his own people or the people he used to lead?
Well, around the world, including the United States, it strikes me that the first impression was simple amazement.
Yeah.
That he has kept his faculties, that he can still argue with a judge, that he can tell a judge, the judge can't tell him what to do. He can still play the game, you know, and reminds me of other famous war criminals. Milosevic, for example, who's also playing a game and stretching it out for month after month after month, or maybe even Hermann Göring in Germany. You expect the guy to be at least a little contrite after being responsible for an estimated 250,000 people killed during his 30 years, but he's not contrite.
Yeah. Dan, there was a lot of work at the Supreme Court this week. They ruled that detainees and foreign prisoners from Afghanistan and Iraq have to have access to the courts. How big a setback is this ruling for the Bush administration?
Well, big.
Yeah.
It's a big blow to the whole Bush-Ashcroft concept that when you're the commander-in-chief, you have all the power and nobody else has any power and nobody can tell you what to do. As Justice O'Connor said, in her opinion, you do not have a blank check. There is a division of powers, and there is still even the ability of people to go up and say, I want habeas corpus. I don't know. I want to know why I'm being held. And that's all been reestablished by the courts. Mm-hmm. Some of us thought we'd lost it.
Yeah. Another Supreme Court was in the news this week. This one in Israel. They ruled that part of the barrier wall that Israelis are building in the West Bank, part of it is illegally placed on Palestinian territory. But the court still endorsed Israel's overall right to build that wall. So how significant was that decision?
Well, the Israeli Supreme Court established basically what the United States Supreme Court established, that the administration doesn't have all the power. The Israeli Supreme Court said that the army has a legal duty to balance properly between security considerations and humanitarian considerations, and that they hadn't done that. And the interesting thing is that Prime Minister Sharon says, okay, back to the drawing board. He doesn't say that he doesn't care at all about what happens.
Hmm. Dan, the U.S. Secretary of State and the U.N. Secretary General were both in Sudan this week. Terrible violence there. Government-sponsored already killed tens of thousands of people in the Darfur region. Is there any international will to avoid another catastrophe? It could be on the scale of Rwanda or of Bosnia.
We will very soon find out. It is clear that the Sudanese government doesn't plan to do very much about it, although they claim to, and it's going to be a test of whether the United Nations can do something.
Thank you. Very quickly, Marlon Brando died this week. He was 80 years old. It's a sad time.
He set the stage for Paul Newman and Warren Beatty and for a whole generation of actors like Robert De Niro, pugnacious at times and gentle at times, swaggering at times, and wounded at times. You know, he was, from my generation, not that I am an actor, but he was an actor of my generation, and they're very different today.
Thank you very much, NPR senior news analyst Dan Shore.